www.themouthmagazine.com.
Talking to me today, the one and only Dylan Howe.
Hello.
Dylan, we're going to talk about your album Subterranean, which is subtitled New Designs on Bowie's Berlin.
That's right.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Mouthcast.
So let's begin actually by looking back to Bowie's Berlin period, the Low and Heroes albums, both issued in 1977.
That's right, yeah.
And in itself, putting out that amount of quality music in that span of time, I think 9 or 10 months, is an incredible achievement.
Yeah, I don't know how he did it, really. I think maybe he had stored up a lot of stuff over the previous years, or definitely seemed to be in a really good creative space versus his sort of physical and mental uncertainty. Kind of a bit fragile at that point.
Cocaine psychosis, I think we're allowed to say that.
Yeah, I think he was subsisting on milk,
yeah,
mostly at that point, and another white powder, yeah. Foods, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I suppose he was just in a good kind of creative thing, and he didn't want to do another Young Americans or like another kind of commercial album. So it's interesting that he just thought, right, I'll do something unusual and quite sparse and kind of harder to listen to, but I suppose creatively a lot more fulfilling, maybe. Yeah,
on an artistic level, they seem a particularly brave move. Mm-hmm. He'd spent most of his career in the mainstream, or at least in the limelight. But I don't really know whether they willfully go against what he'd done before, as opposed to more just being at the point where he felt he could do as he pleased. Because he was absolutely broke at the time as well, I think.
I didn't know that, really.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he moved to Berlin, and then he was sort of getting into lots of the groups that were happening around that time. And I think he wanted it to sound a little bit like that. And he invited some of those guys from Neu and Cluster to play on the record, but I don't think they did in the end. So he used his sort of working band, and then with Eno and stuff, and Robert Fripp on some things. So he had some really good people to draw on and stuff. And then, I mean, taking yourself out of a normal environment, and especially not being in America, it had a good impact on him, I suppose, didn't it? I'm not sure how well it was received at the time critically. And I know that live he would play some of these instrumentals at the beginning of the gigs, and everyone was a bit confused, really. So hats off to him for doing it, really, I suppose.
Yeah.
He was ahead of the game. Yeah.
The first side of those two albums, or the first side of each album, obscured, twisted, really, a classic rock sound, and the second side's are much more impressionistic. So there was clearly something highly intellectual going on, but also, I think, really interestingly, really emotional as well, because although the ambient stuff is sometimes described as a cold European sound, I think it's actually really warm.
Yeah, I think that's why I was sort of drawn to them as well, as you've got these two kind of opposing things happening at the same time, and making this sort of introspective platform, which I think is much better when you can leave a bit more to your own imagination to kind of project onto the music a little bit more,
yeah,
rather than having everything laid out for you in this sort of absolute pop formula, if you like. So that's one of the powers of it. It does sort of take you away somewhere, and you have to kind of think about it, or you're kind of in a different space, really. And that's in all good music, I think. You've taken out of yourself a little bit.
I think that's translated really well onto your record, because it's cinematic, but it's not incidental music, is it?
No, you definitely don't want that. You do feel that cinematic scope and stuff. And I wanted it to be not stuff that could just be on in the background. This is it's alive. It's got a lot of spirit and introspection as well, but you keep that mood there. And I think we were successful to get that on the album, as we didn't really, we kind of strayed away or kind of added things, but still you can hear all of those tunes and all those melodies and those sounds in these new versions anyway. So that was what I was after, really. I wanted to hear those tracks, but with a sort of improvising, exploring, sometimes muscular kind of group inside that music. That was the point, really, because I don't know if anyone's really ever tried to do that. When they do kind of electronica, it doesn't have that aspect of improvising musicians swing or everyone really stretching out and wanting to do things inside the music. So that was what I wanted to hear, and I had to make it.
We're roughly the same age, so I guess we were both 8 or, or thereabouts when Low and Heroes came out. I was aware of Bowie initially because my dad had most of his albums in his collection.
Okay.
And eventually I worked backwards to the Berlin period.
I think I did that as well. I think I remember playing Ziggy Stardust and thinking, oh yeah, this is kind of interesting. And then Station to Station. But I think when Let's Dance came out, and I thought, wow, yeah, this sounds great. And then I saw him in concert. And then I started to work my way back, Scary Monsters, and then Heroes, and then Low and stuff. Maybe what I liked about him was when he wasn't in character as such, or there wasn't so much an element of theatrics there, that it was more of a kind of lean, pared down kind of version of himself. And I just always liked that rhythm section, you know, Dennis Davis and George Barrow, I think, and Carlos Alomar and stuff. Eno's contribution. I mean, everyone just sort of works their way backwards, don't they, really? They start with what's popular at the time, I was the wrong age, really.
So the idea for the album Subterranean, how did that come about?
Well, I'm definitely trying to find something to do in my quintet, which was coming away from doing kind of Blue Note inspired or those sort of charts. And I wanted to find something that was a bit more personal to me. So I didn't feel like I was just trying to imitate what all these great guys had done in the 60s. So somehow the Bowie thing just kind of, I started to play things I've been listening to when I was younger, and then I heard the Philip Glass versions, and I liked that idea of where you could go with it.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, well, maybe this might be able to work with the group I had, taking a kind of Coltrane improvising sound into this sort of electronica. So it sounds futuristic, but at the same time, kind of retro as well. So you've got that kind of nice, crunchy combination of the two things, because you want to make something which sounds sort of new and space age, if you like, but also with all the right elements of the sort of jazz that I think is the sound of jazz. It's like the Miles Quintet or Coltrane's quartet. That to me is the sound of that music. So trying to marry those elements together, that was the plan, really. So then I tried a track, Warsawa, with a quartet lineup, and that seemed to go pretty well, just sort of opening it up, you know, we play the tune and then we play it double time and then we kind of go into solo. So, and then I wanted to find a way to kind of not always using that as a kind of arrangement template. So over the years of having time and money to work on it, I just sort of honed it and did various sort of overdubbing sessions after main recording session for the quartet, and then just sort of got into really overdubbing and editing and mixing, and you know, just really wanted to make it right and make it so that it could stand alongside the originals, but also for it to be an entity of its own as well. So you don't like have to be into Bowie to sort of say I like it. It's a sound, and it's got this sort of exciting but inward looking sort of atmosphere, and scope.
Do you know if David's heard this record?
I know he's got it. It was encouraging that it was featured on his site, like on a page, and they were saying, we're loving it here. And I was told, can you send an extra copy so that he can hear it and stuff? And then the line has gone dead. So I don't know if he's kind of filing a lawsuit, or he just hasn't got an opinion, or he's waiting to turn up at one of the gigs on the tour and just suddenly spring on stage or something.
Or maybe he's sat in the studio with his head in his hands thinking, this is what I should have done instead of the next
show. That would be funny, yeah. Well, any or none of the above could be true.
Yeah. It's respectful to Bowie's work, but it doesn't feel reverential. You've taken things to your own place.
Yeah, I didn't want to do a tribute album. I find that it's never good to do that, really, because in a sense, the fact that you're doing it anyway is a compliment, and you're saying, hey, I like this stuff. I like what you did. I mean, anything outside of that, nobody really wants that. I don't think even the person does, because they get embarrassed, I would think. So yeah, it is in as much as the act of actually doing it and seeing it through the whole process is the compliment. I didn't want to feel like I couldn't kind of tread anywhere or kind of change anything, because, oh, it's so austere and it's a kind of sacred text and stuff, because it's not. I don't think anything is. I mean, you just want to make the best thing you can make, and you know, if you want to make an omelette, you know, you've got to break a few eggs, etc. So you just got to kind of always have an element of detachment from the thing, and really not really think about, oh, what are they going to think of it, because it's not really why you're doing it, is it?
Bowie has operated in so many different musical areas over the years. Were you ever tempted to kind of widen out the project so you could rework other bits?
I don't think they would have worked. Everything that I selected was the best stuff for this. I did try a few other things.
Go on. Surely somebody's got to sort out the Tonight album.
Oh my God, there are some like really good tracks in it, like Loving the Alien is a good track. But I think the stuff with vocals on it and the stuff with a regular song format, it's just not going to sound good if you jazz it up. I mean, that's just even saying that, I'm cringing. It's just horrible. So I wanted it to defy genre, even though obviously it's got sort of elements of, you know, all that stuff in it. So nothing else would have sounded good. It could have sounded pretty nasty. So I left it at those tracks. And there were certain other sort of, there was like Sense of Doubt, and there was a couple of other tracks which I couldn't really get anything from. So I didn't really try them and stuff. I did do a version of V2 Schneider, which I like that track, but I kind of had to approach it with a beat and stuff. And then it started to sound a bit cod sounding. So I had to jettison that one.
Speed of Life as well, I imagine, would be quite difficult.
That one, yeah, if you took away the backbeat and all that. And then also, you don't want it to be too long either. I mean, it's already like a double album on the vinyl. Mm. And that's expensive. Yeah. you want to print two albums? I think it is good as it is, really. And I don't think there's anything I can kind of add to it with the recorded versions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To me, it sounds great as it is. And it was 5 years in the making, so it was a real labour.
More than that, actually, yeah.
Right. A real labour of love then. And interesting times ahead for you shortly, because you're actually taking it out on the road. I'll list the tour dates on the page, okay. But I wondered about performing it live, because we did chat once before, and you mentioned then, and you mentioned again today, a lot of overdubbing and kind of layering on of textures. So how different a listening experience will the shows be, and how different will they be for you as a performer?
We're going to use the album as the foundation and like the template.
Yeah.
And because I've got Steve Lodder on since, he's going to be doing, I mean, he's going to have an extra arm or something at some point, because he's got his work cut out for him. But he's sounding good, and he's on the case. And I think it's okay, because in a sense, it's the sound of a quartet with a synth player. So what I'm looking for is that live it'll be like the album, but more so. So it's going to be like an extension, and it's going to be happening on the stage right there and then. So I've got a good feeling about it. And so it'll be kind of more than the album. And we'll see where it goes. And also the fact that I'm going to have a film that's going to be projected at the same time, it's going to kind of, you know, add to this cinematic scale and stuff. So hopefully it will be unlike anything out there that you can go and see it over the next couple of months, if at all. So come and see it. You know. Yeah.
After the tour, what is next for you?
I'm not sure, really. Just doing various sort of other gigs with other people and seeing what's going to happen next year with Wilco, and continuing to write a new album that I'm going to be working on and stuff. And got an album with my dad that's sort of in the can that we have to sort of overdub and edit a bit. Yeah, and just sort of more of the same, but more. I don't know, really. You know. We'll see, really.
Brilliant, brilliant. And I'll presume for you that there's a key moment on the album. We'll play out with it.
Well, interesting. Yeah, I feel like the top and tail of the album encapsulate it, really. Yeah, so the opening track, Subterraneans, is a good way into the album. You get a feeling of the kind of scope of it, at where it's going to go and how it slowly unravels and everything. And then the last track, Moss Garden, which was a favourite of mine on those albums, which... I like this on the album because it's Ross Stanley, myself and my dad, and we're doing a kind of open improvisation. It's just got this really nice sort of atmosphere.
Dylan, thanks very much for your time, and good luck with the
thanks,
tour.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah.
Really looking forward to seeing that.
I'll see you up in Lincoln. Yeah, great.
Great. Thanks a lot. Pleasure to speak to you.
You too. All right.
Cheers.
www.themouthmagazine.com